zone.
Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division will come to order April 21st, 2:10. One half hour after session, sort of. Today we're going to continue our discussion on 3512. As a reminder, this bill was on the agenda on April 13th. We adopted the DE3 amendment and heard briefly from Joel Carlson on behalf of the Amateur Sports Commission, which is an account in our division. Representative Hansen stated that he intended to work with the stakeholder groups and come back with a new draft to work on some of the remaining concerns, and that has been that DE4 new draft has been posted since Tuesday afternoon. And so we are going to continue our discussion on House File 3512, document DE4. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move House File 3512 to bring the bill back before the committee, and I will move the DE4 amendment to get it in the author's order.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to update the committee on some activities that have taken place since we last met. I believe a week ago, last Monday, we met in this room with stakeholders where there was a large number of folks representing a wide variety of interests relating to this bill. There are a lot of people interested in this bill from a variety of reasons. And intervening after that meeting, I have been meeting with the Minnesota Health Department and the Minnesota Ice Arena Managers Association and others to get input and to bring forward the DE4. Not everyone is going to be happy with the DE4, but I do want to just start out with saying something that I think has disrupted the progress of the bill.
Excuse me, before you start that, Representative Hansen, let us vote on having the amendment DE4 before us. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. DE4 is before us, and we'll continue until there's a DE5, or if there's a DE5, or whatever happens. DE4 is the document that we will be working from this moment forward. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As I was mentioning, there are a lot of people interested in this issue, and emotions are very high on all sides of this issue. But I believe the line was crossed. Earlier this week, there was a display put in the Great Hall of the Capitol that mentioned this bill and referenced my name as the author of the bill, and it had a mannequin with a hockey jersey and a gas mask on it, and I find that was offensive. I condemn that action. I don't think it was helpful to this debate. It is not within the I don't believe it's within the way that we should operate here in the House or the Senate, and I regret that happened. And because that happened, and I met with you as the chair, I'm not asking for us to move forward on this bill today, that we want to take input on this and potentially take action next week. But I think because of the action of that display, it has inflamed emotions again relating to this. That was not my intent. I have been trying to work in good faith with people over the last few weeks to try to reach a compromise, and I think we are very close with that. My hope today would be that people would testify and we could take as much testimony as possible on this. I understand there are people who were here anticipating we would be out of session maybe 11 or 11:30 and have been unable to stay. But I wanted to just get on the record that I do not support what happened this week. I think it has hurt the effort, and it's not how I operate, and don't want to operate that way. So with that, I'll walk through the DE4 amendment.
Please.
So the DE4 amendment continues with the effort to try to look at this as a comprehensive approach rather than dealing with just equipment. It relates to indoor air quality at ice arenas. And so subdivision section 1 relates to kind of the definitions, and it requires licensing after January 1st, 2011 with a sliding fee scale based on the equipment that's being operated. I've had some input since the DE4 has come out that maybe a flat fee would be appropriate. Why do we have a licensing fee? Currently, this program is operated out of the general fund. The general taxpayers of Minnesota pay for the regulatory actions that affect the indoor ice arena, the inspections, etc. And so I believe that we should have some cost recovery from the folks who are being regulated under current regulations and in future regulations related to this statute. But there's some cost recovery through licensing. In the realm of public health, this also provides a clear regulatory tool for the Department of Health to revoke a license. So you have something that could be pulled if there is an incident or if there is non-compliance. I want to be clear because there's been input that I did not take. There was some suggestions that we should have one license, maybe a supervisory role, and that there could be arenas operating under one license. The Department of Health provided me with input, and I agree that we should have responsibility beef, that there should be a license for a arena, not for sheet, but for an arena that is defined under the statute. So if I was a group, an entity, maybe a government entity that had five different ice arenas, and there was a problem at one, I would want the one, if we're going to have to revoke a license, to be revoked rather than all five. I think that each of those facilities should be licensed and have the certified operator. So that is where the licensing requirement comes in. That goes through subdivision 2 and into subdivision 3. Subdivision 3 has that you would have an operator
training. Excuse me, Representative Hansen. Representative Erdahl has a question to the first point that you made.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, I just want to be clear. If it's an arena that has two ice sheets under one roof, would they be paying one fee for, or
one fee.
One fee. Okay. And if one of the sheets of ice was found to be, one of the areas was found to be deficient, they would have to just fix the one, and they wouldn't have to close down the whole thing.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, the discretion would be there with the Minnesota Department of Health and the regulatory action that they could take. They would have that tool, potentially, to close it down. But I would think in a case like that they would be dealing with the sheet that has the problem.
Representative Torkelson, on that point.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Along those same lines to Representative Hansen, does the department currently have the power to fine ice rinks that are out of compliance? And if that's the case, have they been collecting fines in the past, or will there be fines included in this process?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, there are folks from the Department of Health here that could, they have some authorities now under rules. In this particular provision relating to the license, on line 2.9 and 2.10, we give that clear statutory authority for revocation of a license. The language now that's used under the current rule is, I believe, a certificate. Certificate is of operation that they have, but what we're doing here is providing that clear revocation But in terms of financial penalties, I am not putting financial penalties here.
Okay. Please continue.
Going on to page 2, line 2.18, indoor ice arena operator training and certificate. You'll notice a later starting date. I know there's some questions about cross-referencing the license with the certification. Our idea here was you have the dealer license or the operator license, and then the training certificate or the certified operator, you give a couple more months for folks to come in compliance with that in the initial initial program. The same thing as I mentioned here, that we want to have a person, that the Department of Health can go to a person if there is an incident on site. I know that some folks will not agree with that, but that's the idea here, that you'd have somebody trained. I've had input since the DE4 came out about on the having a person on site, maybe having on call, because we don't want to have that person stationed there 24/7, 365, that you have some way of designating somebody or having on call status. I think that's a good recommendation that you'll probably hear later. In terms of the training, the Commissioner of Health shall issue a certificate to has completed a training course. It lists some of the things that can be included in training. When you look at other types of certification and training programs, these are components that can be included. We have the Commissioner of Health shall consult with the Minnesota Ice Arena Managers Association, the League of Cities, and the school districts to continually revise and update the content of that training. The way that other training works is they have a planning meeting, look at what issues are important, try to develop that content. It could be included with existing training programs that are there, and you'd have attendance monitored and that certification provided. Subdivision, so what we've done in Subdivision 2 and Subdivision 3 is we're providing for licensing, we're providing for certification and training, and then we go to equipment.
And one point, can the certified ice arena operator be a volunteer?
Madam Chair, yes.
Continue on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. On line 3.6, indoor ice arenas required equipment. And based on the input, we have narrowed this to remove the required equipment for catalytic converters. We have removed edgers, and we are looking at non-electric resurfacing equipment. Based on the input from stakeholders, then we have subdivision B, where we have a time management issue relating to other internal combustion engines, relating to, for example, edgers or other internal combustion engines that may be operating inside. On C, and I want to be very clear on this, I have moved back the date to January 1st, 2015, and I provide an option, not saying one or the other. And the reason there's an option here is when this bill first started, I had folks come to me and say, well, we should exempt all electric equipment. So I have. Give people the choice. If you have all electric equipment, that you don't have to get monitors. If you don't want to get the equipment, don't want to get electrical equipment, then you could get monitors that monitor and record the concentration of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. So I'm not requiring that the monitors are hooked to a ventilation system anymore. I'm just requiring that data be collected. I believe when you look at, this is actually protection for the owners of these arenas, where they're going to have data that can be retained in order to help if there is an incident or is not an incident. I think you will hear from at least one manufacturer on range of price later this afternoon of current technology, not the technology that may be available in 5 years. We have on D the requirement that the arena operator should notify the Commissioner in Health in writing of how they choose, whether they choose to be dealing with the electric and be dealing with air monitoring equipment. So this is 2015, 5 years from now, the three different legislative sessions. And I provide later on in the bill for a pilot project with the Department of Health to work with equipment manufacturers so that they can test what works during that five-year period. Item E on line 3.26, we had input from large facilities that have air handling devices that enlarge air capacity. So I provide for the Department of Health to grant an exemption for those entities such as the Excel Center or Mariucci or the DEC. Subsection 2, plan development. This is fairly similar to the prior DE. This relates to grants. The concern has been raised about what is the cost, what is the cost to comply. So we're changing the Mighty Ducks grants. There haven't been Mighty Ducks grants for a long time, but this would say if there were Mighty Ducks grants in the future, that they be they can be used for ventilation systems and for long-term air monitoring and recording devices. So this is saying we should look at that health and safety if we are going to be looking at providing public money for the industry in the future. Pilot project, section 3, I mentioned earlier. This is a one-year process that could occur after the current rulemaking would be completed. So that to evaluate, again, if we look at technology, technology changes very quickly over time. And I anticipate that we are going to see more and more changes relating to some of this technology. Rules. The Minnesota Department of Health, Section 4, is currently in rulemaking. This provides some direction for the rulemaking. There were issues raised about placarding, limits, concentration. All this is provided direction to the rulemaking process that would occur. In addition, it also provides for after rules have been done to have reporting, so we have compliance and enforcement reporting similar to what's been done in other areas and other regulatory areas around the state. That eliminated what was in DE3 Section 6, compliance and reporting requirement. Section 5 and the new Section 6 are revisers instruction and repealers that were suggested to us by the Minnesota Department of Health. And that is the DE4. As I mentioned, I'm open to other suggestions. I know there are folks who disagree with some of these items, but I believe that this is a good compromise, and I would be open to just taking testimony or any questions from the members.
Representative Hansen, these reports to the chairs and ranking members, ranking minority members of the Senate and the House of Representative committees with primary jurisdiction over public health policy and financing containing information on the evaluation results. Do you think maybe the Amateur Sports Commission should receive the reports?
Madam Chair, I think the Amateur Sports Commission would be, as well as maybe the Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Committee, not just the Public Health Committees. It might be good to have all appropriate committees and the Amateur Sports Commission be recipients of those required reports.
Or the committee that the Amateur Sports Commission rests with, I would think.
Yeah. Madam Chair,
but
also,
and as the current case exists, it's us. It's the Cultural and Outdoor Resources. But at other times, it's been state departments, and it's been other committees at other times. But the Amateur Sports Commission, Representative Hansen, do they have oversight on the ICE arena managers and operators?
Madam Chair, the Minnesota Ice Arena Managers Association is a separate group. It's an association. It's not a subunit of the Amateur Sports Commission. I'm not sure if Mr. Shagaby is here right now. Appears not.
All right, thank you. Other questions? Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. If the state's going to do this testing, it kind of reminds me of Santa Claus trying to control behavior, because he's once a year and you'll talk to people and do stuff. The good rink, it will be a rink that's being tested by the rink managers, rink workers on a weekly basis. Is that motivated in the training, or where does that come in from?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
And Representative Haas. I think that what the training does, it is improves operator competency and the folks that are working there. It provides a minimum competency. But my experience with training is that you can also highlight the best practices. So when you've got operators that are doing things that they've found that work, they can work in a collegial way and demonstrate and document ways, things that have worked and what they find work best. That peer-to-peer training, formalized peer-to-peer training, is much more effective than anecdotal or reading it, my experience, out of reading the manual or reading in the book. That peer-to-peer, bringing out what's working, what's not working, and having dialogue, I think, can help bring this out, because we can rely on all the equipment we want, but we're going to have people that operate it, and we want them to be working at the best level that they can. And that's why you would have the certification.
Okay. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, testifier. Unless you're testing on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, you can run into some pretty serious problems. Ironically, it's the rinks that are not used very much. So some of the best rinks, where there's just a pro team that skates once in a while, the carbon monoxide will go down and it'll sit and it'll pocket up, and it may not be in one part of the rink but could be on the other, and it can get some very dangerous things on some very expensive rinks. The rinks where you got a lot of little guys skating around really fast and kicking the air around, they'll kick it around and get it cleared out of there. So it's opposite of what one's brain might tell them. My next question is that if the state is going to do the testing in many of the cities, larger cities at least, have health departments. Will they be driving by the health department that's already there to do testing that could well be given to the city that's their health department is capable of doing that? Will be there? That's done in pools. I was just wondering if we're going to do this on the state level, are we going to give the option to do it more efficiently by allowing the cities to do their own testing on those rinks?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, it would be the operators are going to be doing the testing. The Minnesota Department of Health role is to go out and do inspections and checking up, but there's a responsibility here of the operators to be doing testing, and then the long-term responsibility is to have the continuous monitoring devices that would be sampling and recording.
Madam Chair, then please...
Representative Haas.
Representative Hansen, please educate me. What is the state going to do to earn the licensing fee?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, they're going to be doing inspections as they do now. They're going to be working on the certification and training programs. They're going to be, those two are fairly, they're staff intensive type of things. So you're going to have the equipment or the inspections of the sites. You're going to have looking at the data. You're going to be having the certification and training programs and any other requirements that are going to be developed in the rulemaking.
Madam Chair, just one last comment. I appreciate your I appreciate you doing this, because when parents send their kids somewhere to recreate, you'd kind of like to get them back with all their arms and legs and breathing and stuff. But there's other dangerous things that exist at some of these sports facilities. Is there any contemplation of putting that all together in one package to be inspected, such as bleachers and those types of factors?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Hawes, I'm having enough challenges with this particular narrow definition.
Yeah, I would, Madam Chair, I'd agree to that. If you just have a little kids run up to the higher set of bleachers every once in a while and breathe and then run back and skate, we may solve all this, you know. So, thank you.
Madam Chair, just seriously, there have been similar types of issues relating to bleacher safety, relating to garage door openers, relating to pool safety over the last 10 to 15 years. They're all very emotional, and they're all new things that people didn't think about. You know, they just took for granted. But we did grapple with them, and we did come to some ways of dealing with things differently than we had in the past because there were risks that we were unaware of. And so all of those had challenges, and we'll take them one by one. I know the Department of Health is here. They may want to say something, Madam Chair.
I have a couple questions about the rulemaking process also from the Department of Health.
Madam Chair, Linda Brummer from the Department of Health.
Ms. Brummer. I'm told that you started this rulemaking process before the bill started.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Why?
Generally, we look at our rules continuously, and without any direction, if we find new scientific information or we get enough issues with a rule, we will revise our rules when we see the need. We don't just do it when we're specifically told to revise them. So we felt, we knew this rule was old enough and it needed updating. It needed updating partly because part of the law addresses the indoor arenas when you have like monster truck pulls. There have been activities aside from arenas that have carbon monoxide problems, former warehouse buildings where go-karts were installed indoors, so we had that issue to address in addition to updating the ice arena rules. So we started, published notice, and we had some public meetings last November and December just to talk about what changes we were looking at in the arena rules, and so that was independent of this.
Okay, and then I'm told that you prefer not to have a timeline, deadline, or an imposed timeline that you have to be done by a certain time, but that you are working through the rules and addressing the issues as they've been coming up. Do you have a possible ending point then for these particular rules?
Madam Chair, we were working on the rules, and we've sort of put them aside right now because of all the issues that have come up due to the legislature discussion. At the time earlier, we were thinking we would be done with the rules by next December. The reason I suggested we not have a deadline, and not because we wanted to delay our rulemaking, it's just all the pieces of rulemaking as we're seeing right now are not always in our control. And so if you mandate a deadline, if the administrative law judge doesn't respond in time, I can't do anything about that. Sometimes rules become controversial when you didn't think they were controversial. So that was all. It was just it's easier if there isn't a deadline.
And Ms. Brummer, when your department is in the process of rulemaking, what kind of outreach or input do you get from affected groups or people, or
Madam Chair,
other than you publish and then you expect responses, or do you reach out to groups that have in this case, hockey players' parents or figure skating clubs?
Madam Chair, we do try to reach out to interested parties. In some cases, we will put together a listserv, and we very actively been putting things on websites for rulemaking. Staff don't always like it, but I often make them go out and have meetings around the state the old-fashioned way, and then they do come back and thank me later, but not when they have to take the trips. In this case, there was a meeting in Bemidji, there was one in St. Paul, and I believe one in St. Cloud. The attendance was not, a lot of times we don't get high attendance, but the people who show up are thoughtful about the issue and care about it, so we don't necessarily count it based on numbers. We try. This has certainly generated a lot of discussion this time. We've learned a lot from these hearings, and that's why the language, the directive as to what to include in our rulemaking, that's been a list we have been working on along with all the people who have been making comments. So this has really made it will make a better rule from all the discussion that we've had here at the legislature.
Any other questions? Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bremer, historically, our rules for air and water quality have been based on what's called the 160-pound man standard that we have. That has been our standard, our basic standard. Are your current rules based on that 160-pound man standard, or my shorthand for what the past was, or do you have a current child-based standard?
Madam Chair, Ms. Representative Wagenius, the proposal, the standards that we've looked at are from a varied sources. We've looked at occupational safety and health standards, which you know are an 8-hour limit. We have looked at children's exposure. We had been proposing that we would lower the carbon monoxide level, even in our rulemaking before these hearings. The question has been how far. I might offer, in anticipation of further questions, I have talked to the Minnesota Medical Association, the Occupational Health and Safety Committee, and I have asked for their assistance because of the scrutiny that these numbers are coming under right now. I have asked them in our rulemaking if they will help us look at the numbers.
Okay. But Representative Guinness.
No, but I want to know your current standard. Is it the one we're operating under right now, before the new rule? Is it based on the 160-pound man standard, or is it a child-based standard?
Ms. Bremer.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I suspect it's based on the 160 man. It's so old that I suspect it's not been part of our addressing children's health in the last decade. It's that old a standard.
Madam Chair,
Representative Wagenius.
Members, that's of high concern to me, because for two reasons. Children take in more air per body weight than adults do, and they're lowered to the ground. And if we're using an old standard right now, the first thing that I start thinking about is the liability to the ICE rinks and to the state. And if the standard is that old, you can't go fast enough to get this rule done. There is no way you can go fast enough, because you're putting, by having an old standard, all of these folks who have ICE rinks now and think they're being safe for kids and are not being safe for kids. What that means, if something does happen to a child, then are we as a state liable as well as, because there is a child-based standard in rules, and if you haven't adopted it yet, that's something that we did in 2000 or 2001. I can't remember which of the years, but that's a long time ago. So I don't know, Representative Hansen, have people brought up insurance questions to you, how much insurance they're carrying? Has this been part of the discussion? And it makes it far more acute for me right now because we're using an old standard.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, often in this debate, the question of cost comes up, the immediate cost, the cost for equipment, the cost for training, the cost for licensing. There's been some discussion about the liability cost, because many of these rinks are city-owned, municipally owned. There are some that are owned by other public entities. So the liability cost has been raised, but not to the as much as the immediate upfront cost of a license or training or compliance with equipment or future equipment down the line. The health department is preparing a fiscal note in terms of the DE4, but it's hard to quantify any potential liability costs.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think we've got to talk about that. And I think we've got to talk about, I don't know what the potential liability to the state is. If we're operating under an old rule and the statute for child-based standards was put in place 10 years ago, because I think there are a lot of parents who probably think they're safe under the old rule, and we don't know that. So that's maybe Representative Hansen, we need to ask more about insurance as we're going forward. I'll ask those questions.
Ms. Brommer.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't know, though. The other part of the question is, I don't know that the number is that bad. It may still be protective, even though we have proposed moving the carbon monoxide number down from 30 parts per million to 25, and that's where we want to do some serious work on the science of the number. And the larger arenas have said there are other elements at play, is whether or not your machinery is electrical, or if there's enough ventilation. So it's not just a number like a drinking water number where you're directly consuming the water. So it's a more complicated equation.
Representative Wagenius.
So children aren't directly consuming the air? I don't get that.
Madam Ms. Chair, Brunner. Representative Wagenius, the issue is that the test of the air is taken right after the ice resurfacer goes over the ice. And one of the things you can do to dissipate that carbon monoxide is to run the ventilation and mix the air better. So there's the air mixing quality. Or you can delay the time that they can go back on the ice. So it's just there are other elements at play.
Representative Wagenius.
But there still has to be a basic standard for that child. I mean, there is a standard, and no matter how you attain it, whether it's with new equipment or ventilation or whatever, the standard itself has to meet for a child, okay, not for an adult. And particularly if we were using 160 pounds, and I'm thinking some of the kids playing hockey have got to be, I mean, my grandson plays hockey, and he doesn't wear anywhere. He's only 8 years old. So anyway, that's a big concern of mine.
I'll follow up with you. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, well, Ms. Brummer is here. I know the Health Department can't endorse any legislation, but I do want to just, for the record, so I have worked with the Health Department on this DE4. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
A lot of hours, Ms. Brummer?
Oh, that's correct.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Brummer, I don't know if you were here when Representative Hawes asked the question about whether or not this might be, the inspection might be delegated to local public health. And I think you should think about that. And if you need authorizing language for some of the licensing fees to follow with that delegation agreement. I think you've got broad enough statutes for the Commissioner of Health to just make a choice on doing that. But as this bill proceeds, if you would look at that issue, I'd appreciate it. My more specific question is about the operator training and certificate. I think it's important to have people trained when we're trusting the health of the participants to them. But I wondered if you've had a chance much to think about how you're going to do that training in terms of whether part of it can be online and part of it has to be experiential, whether or not. I'm just thinking if some of these arenas may have a fair amount of turnover in some of the staff that work in it. And so I want to make sure that in protecting the health of the participants, which I think is incredibly important, we're not making it impractical for those who really are doing the good work of getting people trained and able to handle the responsibilities we've given them.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler.
Ms. Brummer.
Yes, we certainly will look into that. We run a number of other training programs for other certifications and can certainly look at online. We would plan to work closely with the Arena Association managers. They have an annual meeting where we have given talks, but I can see the need to make this very accessible.
Representative Loeffler.
And Madam Chair, I don't know if this is an appropriate model or not, but I know in some other community-based training programs, I'm thinking particularly some of the programs that the DNR operates, they actually do train people throughout the state who actually run the training courses. They get to be certified as trainers, and that might be another approach that you might use to make sure that there's geographic accessibility and response that way.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, Ms. Brummer. You seem to have been describing an ongoing process of rulemaking that has apparently been somewhat short-circuited at the moment, but can you just briefly describe the ongoing process that you've had over the past, I don't know how long. I know that we've had indoor ice rinks in this state for a long time, and I assume you've had some kind of rules in place. How that rulemaking process goes forward and what enforcement how you've enforced those rules in the past.
Ms. Brummer.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, the existing rule, I believe, well, I don't even remember what year that was passed. I wasn't at the health department. 77. I believe it was actually under authority of, there was a whole different Administrative Procedures Act at the time on how to adopt rules. So this revision of the rules is we basically put out a notice, tell people we're engaging in rulemaking, we ask for their comments, we put together a draft of what we think is a reasonable rule, and then we publish that, and this is all through official publication through the Secretary of State's office. Then there are required periods of time. We have to have the rules out for, I think it's 60 days for people to comment on them. We can make revisions in the rules at that point, and so it's an iterative process, basically. But, depending on the comments you have, you get to a final point where you think you've got your final rule, and then you publish that again, and there are approvals by the governor's office along the way too. Those got added in the 90s, so they're not, I don't always remember those, but there are governor's office approvals along the way. And so we finally have our rules published, and then people can ask for a hearing, can request a hearing. And if enough people request a hearing, then you have a hearing where people can comment on the rules in front of an administrative law judge. And then the law judge takes those materials. He or she will assess whether or not the comments are germane to the rule, and will discuss whether or not the agency's actions were reasonable under the proposed rule. So it's a long process, but it does allow you to get into the science of what you need to address when it's a rule like this. Did that answer your question?
Representative Torkelson.
Certainly answered part of my question. The other part of my question is, what sorts of action has the department taken in the past to enforce the rules that were in place?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, generally, and this is partially in response to Representative Loeffler's question too, it's actually the arena operators who do the testing on site. We don't go out and do all of this testing all the time. Our inspector currently does a rotation of the state. He or she can visit the arenas once every 2 years based on the current staffing. Or we follow up if there's a complaint. So there, when we find that there is a report that shows an exceedance of the value, the staff go out and meet and they work on the testing. So basically there's on-site training sometimes that takes place. They go out and try and work on the various pieces that might be causing the carbon monoxide or the nitrogen dioxide levels to exceed. So we do have the ability to, under our administrative penalty orders, to fine them. We haven't done that too much in the past, but we prefer to work with them and bring them into compliance and resolve the problem on site.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again to Ms. Baumer. So has there been resistance on the part of the ice rink operators to cooperate with the Department of Health in the past?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, no.
And so this ongoing process that you've described that we've used for the last, I assume, 30-plus years has really worked pretty well.
Ms. Brommer.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it's worked fine. It's worked as well as it can it's a minimum program. There's not been a very high bar set for the program.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final question. So then, would you describe the current situation as being a critical situation with lots of negative results from indoor air contamination, or is it just part of our ongoing process of trying to make things better as we make new rules?
Ms. Brommer.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think we were comfortable with the current rulemaking as it was moving along, and so I've learned some things about from the public input we've gotten that we had not gotten at our public meetings, but I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's at a critical stage. The rules do need to be revised, and they would continue to be revised. So it's part of our normal business.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, maybe to follow up on that, if we look back to 1977, which I think some of us remember back then, the idea of chronic exposure and cumulative effects wasn't even considered. The standard Representative Lagini has talked about, and I think the Health Department was looking at issues relating to adult male exposure. So just think of what we've learned in terms of the science since 1977. Let's just think of the technology in terms of monitoring devices or equipment or power that have changed since 1977. Let's look at all the things that we've learned since 1977. And I think what we're providing here in the bill, there are things that cannot be done in rulemaking. There's direction that can be provided. And the person who's doing the inspections also does the no smoking indoor air quality inspection. Same person. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes.
So, we have fairly limited staff that have a wide range of things that are here. I think I've provided in prior committees, and we had some of the health discussion in prior committees as well, because this is the third committee that the bill has been in, and it's changed. We've dropped the health standard, the specific numerical number, out of the bill, and we're providing that the health department would provide direction. But you have acute issues. We've had 7 incidents in the last 4 years, for whatever reason. Some may be operator error, some may be related to ice equipment, some may be related to other equipment, but they've happened. In addition, I have a constituent who's come forward who says that they have a chronic exposure issue. And so we have chronic and acute questions that are here. And so what we're trying to do in the bill is address those through a variety of means and still have the rulemaking go on. I believe the bill strengthens the rulemaking process. Certainly, there are probably as many people in this room right now than have attended one or more of the input meetings that were held with various stakeholders. There's a wide range of new people that have come to the table who are interested in this issue and having the public debate. And I think that's healthy. And the longer this is out here during this legislative session, we're getting more input, more ideas that help this particular legislation. But we still have the incidents that have occurred, and we have the chronic question. And so if we can deal with equipment and we can deal with operator training, we would be trying to deal with reducing the risk now and having the process go forward with rulemaking and providing some sidebars that are out there, some requirements way in the future, so that there's an opportunity for change and looking at pilot projects and looking at things that can help this overall issue and changing statute in the Mighty Ducks grants to help pay for it.
We're not dead. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. This danger, different than many other dangers, sometimes you may not even know that it's happening to you with carbon monoxide. You know, if a swing breaks and you go firing off into the grass, you kind of know that you were a little bit in trouble, or if a bleacher board breaks. But you can be out on a rink and take in carbon monoxide and maybe get a little head dizziness or something that you might just relate to the exercise that you've had. The cases that probably brought this to Representative Hansen's awareness might have been written in the paper for somebody that actually went down because of it. But I would suspect most of these dangers, because you can't taste it and it doesn't hurt very much, it bubbles in and bubbles out pretty easily, that people don't even know that they're in danger. There's no way, you can't see it, it doesn't burn you like chlorine burns you, your lungs, it hurts when you take it in. And I think we should be doing things like that. This is part of the leadership, and I appreciate what you're doing here. I mean, obviously there's better ways and you have to adjust it for everybody involved. But this is a silent danger, and people, when they send their kids to the rink, would like to get them back in a healthy state. And that's what this bill does.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Thank you, Ms. Brommer. Is there a representative of the Ice Arena Managers Association here? No. I wanted to see what an Ice Arena Managers Association representative looked like.
They're not at the table, are they?
Are there any?
Madam Chair.
Now I've crossed the line.
Representative Hansen.
I will defend the Ice Arena Managers Association for not being here, because yesterday at the end of the day I met with them and I thought we had agreement, but what I described earlier at the beginning of the committee, they have to go back, and we have to go back and turn the clock back in terms of their reaction of their membership who are reacting to that inappropriate display. And so I don't begrudge the Ice Arena Managers for not being here. They have to represent their association, and they're reacting to the reaction. And that's why I'd ask that, you know, we take testimony. I know there are a variety of people here that provide testimony, but I don't want to begrudge them for not being here, because they're reacting to their membership who are reacting to the display.
And I appreciate that, Representative Hansen, and that's not the reason I was asking to see them, but I have, and I forward some of them to you, had phone calls or emails from ice rink managers that the last couple even came in with the number of the pool bill rather than the ice arena bill on it. But I kind of wanted, the message seems to be the same, is that this is going to be so costly that we can't do this now. And I kind of wanted to ask a couple of questions about how the communication system worked between the one ice rink manager and another, and how often they change their communication. But I'll save that for another day, because we are going to have another day. Also in our packets, members, we have an official resolution from April 12th meeting of the Amateur Sports Commission, and I see that Mr. Carlson is in the room, and I don't know if he was coming down to talk about this in particular, but I have a couple questions about this, Mr. Carlson.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I've been a member of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission since 2003, and just as a couple disclosures, I'm a volunteer here. This isn't a paying gig for me, like I maybe sometimes get in front of you on occasion. So I've spent a lot of time on this issue, and as has the commission, and we all share the same goal, which is safe and healthy, you know, arenas for our kids to play in. And one other disclosure, I haven't met the 160-pound man standard for quite some time. Madam Chair and members, I was actually testifying on the ice arena bill in the Senate the day the Amateur Sports Commission met, and so I wasn't at the meeting when they adopted that resolution, and I didn't really have much to do with its content, but I know that it was discussed at the commission meeting, and the proponents of the bill came to the commission to tell them about the issue, and the general consensus of the board, or unanimous consensus of the board, is that we should allow the Department of Health to continue and finish their rulemaking process, and that we defer legislative action on this bill until after the Health Department has written its rules. I've met with Representative Hansen many times on this issue, and I, you know, just in looking at the DE4 draft, I don't think that we have some concerns about it. I don't think they're unresolvable, and much of it does not do great violence to what the commission asked for, which is, if you look at the back of the bill as it relates to the rulemaking process, it is not proscriptive to the Department of Health. It allows them to complete the process of rulemaking, which we are all participating in, and so, you know, I don't think that does any great violence to what we've asked the legislature to do relative to just laying this over and letting them finish their work. There are a couple of specific concerns about the bill, and I've met with the arena managers. We had a very, I thought, substantial meeting in this room with many of the arena managers from the DEC in Duluth and the XL Energy Senator and the Sports Center in St. Cloud, and a number of arena operators. And I think that universally, as it relates to Section 1 of the bill, they all are supportive of some type of ice arena licensure, certification, and training. Mm-hmm. And I would go a step further and say, when I asked them the question directly, by the way, I think I was sitting in your chair, Madam Chair, at the time. I should have probably been sitting up there, but
Representative Carlson, Mr. Carlson, yeah. Just slow down a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Well,
a little bit slower.
Madam Chair and members, arena operators across the state, I believe, universally support licensing, certification, and training of arena managers. And they would go a step further and tell you that they don't necessarily see a need for any kind of measured fee application. They support a uniform fee for all arenas because whether they are all electric, whether they have propane Zambonis or a combination of both, they all have activities going on inside their arenas that they need to monitor and be responsible for as it relates to air quality. So they all feel that they should pay the same license fee, and they should all get the training, whether they have electric equipment or not. It is not just driven by, the indoor air quality is not just driven by the ice resurfacing equipment. We have car shows. We have monster truck shows. We have boat shows. There are all kinds of things that are going on inside enclosed arenas that have the potential for carbon monoxide emissions, and they all need the training, and they're all in favor of that. I'm not saying that this language is what everyone right now agrees to, but we agree to that concept, and we know that the health department is looking at operator training and licensure in their rulemaking process, and we're supportive of that. And Madam Chair and members, just a couple of issues about the bill that I've shared with Representative Hansen. We have some concerns as it relates to the exemption on page 3, lines 3.26. There are many arenas, including the Amateur Sports Commission's facility in Blaine, that would qualify for a blanket exemption because of our air handling equipment that we currently have. And we have some concerns both that this exemption will probably swallow the rule in a way that the legislature is unintending, but we also, you know, have concerns about the Department of Health granting an exemption from statute as opposed to an exemption from their rule. We don't think that they actually have the authority to do that, and they can grant exemptions from rules. They really don't grant exemptions from statute, and so as it's written, that needs to be cleaned up, we think, a little bit. But the issue as it relates to the Mighty Ducks grants on page 5, the Amateur Sports Commission has had its own update to our Mighty Ducks grant legislation, including, as it was first adopted in 1987 by Representative Milbert, the number was $250,000. We've suggested increasing that amount. We have funded a significant number of ice arenas through that program in the past, both for rehabilitation and for new arenas. So we have our own suggestions about how to update our statute, but we don't have any strong opposition to allowing that Mighty Duck money, which hasn't been available since 2002, but if it is refunded, we don't have any concerns about using that for upgrades of ventilation and other improvements to arenas. So we don't have, concerns about that particular provision. We think we could do more there. But, Madam Chair, happy to answer questions. I want to address Representative Wagenius's question about liability just from some other work I do, but happy to answer your questions. But we think this is a significant improvement. We want to continue to work with Representative Hansen, but we do take some offense that arenas are unsafe for kids, that they are skate at your own risk, and that arena managers are doing something either deliberately or through their negligence, by causing ill health for the people that come to our facilities. And so we do have some concerns about some of that, and we're working in good faith with Representative Hansen to get to an agreement. We're not quite there yet, but it's a significant improvement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson, on your Mighty Ducks remarks, we're not so far away from the next appropriation year, and you talked about you had your own idea of what an amount might be, that, and it would be more than $250,000. Do you want to share that with us?
Madam Chair, I believe Representative Lilly and Representative Atkins introduced a Mighty Ducks grant bill last session that provided for, I believe it was a $5 million bonding request, and it increased the grant number from $250,000 to $500,000, both to reflect the increased cost of arenas and our ability to get more bang for the buck by doing a little larger project for some communities where we could advance the ball greater for them. For example, Big Lake has been here looking for an arena. There were four facilities that were included in at least the Senate version of the bill this year, and each of those were at $500,000, and that was an amount that really pushed the ball across the goal line for those communities. And so we'd be probably looking at a number somewhere in that range.
Probably should have been the puck across.
Push the puck across the goal line.
And so $5 million, did you say, in the bond bill?
$500,000.
Yeah, but the total amount?
The total amount of the bill that was introduced was $5 million.
And was that on behalf of the Amateur Sports Commission?
Madam Chair and members, yes, it was.
And you think you might be in that same arena next year?
I'm happy to report, Madam Chair and members, that the Rochester Volleyball Center was finally done, passed, and signed by the governor. And so the Sports Commission is now on to other adventures, and this is clearly high on our priority list. We have over 20 communities right now that have made requests to the Amateur Sports Commission for Mighty Duck grant funding for expansion or for new facilities. So there is a need. We see that there is a need there should funds become available.
In the resolution that I see before us, or that it's in our packets, that the Amateur Sports Commission is asking for our consideration, you're recommending that the Ice Arena Air Quality Bill be tabled until the 2011 legislative session in order for the stakeholders to be given adequate time to analyze and the best solutions and remedies. In that, if that happened, what role would the Amateur Sports Commission take in rather than just analyzing the best solutions but preparing the best solutions? Or are you waiting for the other stakeholders to come forth with a proposal and then you will say, yes, this is good or this is bad? I don't quite understand that.
Madam Chair and members, I would have maybe more artfully worded the resolution had I been at the meeting and not at the Capitol that day. But I can tell you that one of the first phone calls that Representative Hansen made before he introduced this bill was to the Amateur Sports Commission, and he asked us to convene a group of stakeholders, which we did in room 300 North, and we have been actively involved in this discussion and will continue to do so. I think what they were getting at, and I know the commission was aware that the Department of Health was actively engaged in rulemaking and that there was a December 2010 projected end date for that rulemaking process to be concluded, and I know that we want to continue to be involved in that through our arena manager, Pete Carlson, who's been here on many occasions, and we don't intend to simply react. We want to be involved in a solution, and we have been involved in a solution with Representative Hansen and want to continue in that role. So we don't intend to sit on the sidelines. We want to be active participants.
That's good to hear. Any other questions for Mr. Carlson? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Carlson. I'm still learning what all the many diverse things that the Amateur Sports Commission does, and I'm wondering if it has a role in increasing awareness and training for all the volunteer coaches and others on this kind of a topic or another topic. I mean, quite honestly, I wasn't aware of the health risks of this. I remember the Coon Rapids situation, but that seemed like an aberration and a fluky kind of thing, and now we know that people can have long-term life-altering consequences from chronic exposure. And to what degree does your organization do other organizations step up to take responsibility for making participants, coaches, others aware of this, being aware of potential symptoms? Unfortunately, the symptoms don't show up till I think there's been damage done. But, you know, could you help enlighten me at least, if not other members of the committee, as to that?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, that's something that I think the commission should actively investigate as how we can do that. We run the largest indoor ice facility in the state, and there's one that has a small little skating sheet that just barely nudges above us. They have like 8.5 sheets, and we have 8. But so we're one of the largest in the country, and it runs year-round, and we have literally hundreds of thousands of skating hours and skaters that come to that facility. And to the extent we can be an active participant in making sure that coaches and players are adequately informed or better informed about the symptoms of, you know, of CO poisoning, we want to do that. You need to know also, though, that carbon monoxide is not unique to ice arenas. It's in our homes. It's everywhere. It's in our cars. And so, you know, it's difficult, particularly when you look at the number of tests that come back in non-detector compliance in ice arenas. It's difficult to pinpoint that exposure is simply from an ice arena, but it is a concern, and we need to be aware of it. But I don't think that we're in a position to say that that chronic CO poisoning is a result of ice arenas exclusively. That's above my pay grade. But it's an issue, and we need to be aware of it. And to the extent we can help educate, I think we're, you know, more than willing to, you know, help take on that role for the literally thousands of participants that come to the super rink.
So, Madam Chair, just as a follow-up, so you see your role as more about related to the people who participate in your facility rather than as a connection between all of amateur sports and a unique state role relating to them, whether they ever appeared in your facilities or not?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and members, in addition to those that come to our facility, which, by the way, as a skater or a hockey player, you're going to get to the super rink at some point in your career. We have tournaments year-round. It's a thrill for the kids to come there because they can do so many events at one time. You're going to get to the super rink, whether it is it's the second largest tourist attraction in the Twin Cities beyond the Mall of America. You're going to get to that facility. So it isn't just the people that come there from the Twin Cities. It is a significant facility for statewide activity. But we, in our grant process with facilities, one of the requirements that we have, in addition to their compliance with construction codes and everything else that they need to comply with, is we do have conditions in our grant applications that require communities to do certain things. One of them is to remain financially viable and that they have a source of operational funds going forward, both for their operation and training and personnel. And I don't see any reason why in future grants, should there be any, that we can't have those kinds of conditions relative to clean air in subsequent grants to the communities that we are dealing with. But we currently haven't, and we turn the keys over to communities once they get a grant from us. We make sure, you know, we do follow-up work to make sure that the facility is built, but they're responsible for it once our grant project is done.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, and I'm glad you had an opportunity to encourage former Representative Carlson to slow down. And
he was going so fast. He was going. Keep up.
And part of that, just to be clear, is the pressure of age, because tomorrow's a big day for Mr. Carlson.
That. I heard there's and, a big.
I'm not sure, it might be starting this evening, perhaps, or something, but
tomorrow.
I heard that there was a big, 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 big day tomorrow.
Madam Chair and members, I will have been playing 45 years of hockey tomorrow. I started when I was 5, so, this is my, I think, along with, well, maybe even one behind you, this is my 30th session at the legislature in different capacities, so it'll be 50 tomorrow.
And Mr. Carlson, how tall were you when you started playing hockey?
I have osteoporosis. When I started playing, oh, God, I'd say, I don't know, 3.5 feet maybe, pretty small. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons I've been involved in this issue, as Representative Lilly and others know, I spend a significant amount of time in hockey arenas, you know, at least 3 times a week. And when they say they're unsafe, I mean, that gives us concern. And the people that run the rinks, it gives them concern. We want to have safe facilities for, you know, for everyone that comes there, not just the players, but the participants as well. So that gives us great concern and alarm when it, the impression is left that that we're running unsafe facilities.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, can I just briefly address Representative Guinness's question about liability?
Yes.
As I would understand it, there are only 6 facilities in the state that are owned privately. There are a couple private schools that own their arena. The rest of the indoor ice arenas are owned either by school districts, municipalities, which own the largest share of them, or the state. And as I would read Chapter 3 and Chapter 466 as it relates to recreational liability and immunity, I think that the risk to the state relative to exposure for air would be limited. And so I think that's a concern. But most of these facilities, and again, they're currently running in compliance with the standards, are owned by municipalities that would either have recreational use immunity or caps and limits on their liability, which are currently $400,000 per individual and $1.5 million for all occurrences.
Representative Guinness.
Well, you're looking at it from the point of view of your liability, but which is, you know, one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is what would be the remedy for a citizen, a mom or a dad, or a group of mom or dads. I think they would be surprised to learn that their remedies are quite limited.
As I agree with that in a number of in a number of fashions, but you asked the question, and what I wanted to let you know in particular is that these facilities are publicly owned, whether it's the state. I mean, the overwhelming majority of them are owned by the public and are subject to Chapter 3 and 466.
Representative Guinness.
I understand that, and I also understand that moms and dads and groups of moms and dads would not understand that. One, they would think that there would be more remedies. And moms and dads and groups of moms and dads would think that the state of Minnesota would not have a 1977 air quality standard. I think they'd be appalled to hear that, particularly since it's based on extremely old science. When you looked at adults and didn't look at children who are not little adults, but they take in a lot more air, take in a lot more water, and we know a lot more. And
they're shorter.
Pardon?
I said they're shorter too.
They're shorter to the ground.
Yep.
So I feel what's going on right now is so unfair. So unfair.
Madam Chair, members, that's why, you know, we're totally supportive of the health department in their rulemaking process and completing that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Krause. Representative Hayden, I understand you're a fairly new member of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. I understand that you've heard this bill in 2 or 3 other committees.
That's right, Madam
Chair. Do you
Chair.
Have any opinions that you want to share with us that we should hear?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for taking a little time on this issue. Yes, I do serve on all the health committees here in the legislature, so I served on the Public Health Finance Committee that Representative Hansen, as well as, I think we heard this in Health and Human Service Finance, is that right?
Yep.
And so, with that being said, our former Representative Carlson said that he had been skating for 45 years. I've been skating for 0 years. I'm not a hockey player, and won't profess to be one, and even my children are not hockey players. But in listening to the testimony, in listening to the issues that were raised, it became an issue that I got involved with. I do have a young basketball players in my household, and someone likened some of this issue to be as if you ran a lawnmower in the middle at halftime at one of our basketball games. So as I got to, so if you think about the machines that resurface the ice and edge the ice that they give emissions out. And so when I started to think about it in that context, I really thought of this as an issue that we need to really try to get a handle on. And so I've been working with Representative Hansen throughout the all the iterations and versions of his bill to find support, and I think he's done a pretty good job. I would like to say that I was at the Amateur Sports Commission meeting that former Representative Carlson wasn't, and that we talked about this issue, and there were a couple compelling things that I came out of it. One, that the commission had felt like they hadn't had enough time in order to properly weigh in on this issue. And the executive director, Paul Erickson, who has had a major health issue at the time and felt like he didn't necessarily have enough time. But we found out that there had been, the Amateur Sports Commission had been involved with this for some time in the rulemaking process, as well as the bill had probably been submitted about a month by the time we had the meeting. And so there was and still is, I think, various opportunities for the Amateur Sports Commission to work with Representative Hansen and to weigh in on this issue. To that end, I'm not a voting member, and there was a considerable amount of discussion about this issue, and I think the group felt like they had just become aware of it, even though the members of the staff and even some members of the commission, but the group as a whole hadn't been aware of it. And I think kind of give you what my version was that it was new to them and they needed more information, and they know that we're rapidly heading towards the end of the legislative session and thought that they should put together a work group. And what isn't reflective in the resolution is they put together a work group of myself, Mr. Carlson, the administrator, Paul Erickson, and I forgot the gentleman's name, who is the general manager of the Super Rink, to work together in conjunction with Representative Hansen and the legislature and the health department to work on this issue. And that seemed to be what the body wanted to do. So I just wanted to, just for the record, say that that was the extent of the discussion. And I think that part of what I hope to bring to the Amateur Sports Commission is that we are much more proactive on these issues. And to Representative Loeffler's point, is that we are not just operators of these facilities that we sponsor, but that we take an active role in, or a more active role, if you will, in making sure that we ensure the safety of all folks that are participating in amateur sports in the state.
Thank you very much, Representative Hayden. You know, when I became an adult, I started to do new things, and figure skating was one of those things. And you're an adult now, and you could start with figure skating.
Well, yeah, maybe so. Would you, if I can get instructions from you, Madam Chair?
I can't do it anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll work with Representative Kahn. I know she is still skating.
But Representative Haas.
May I suggest goalie? They
you,
wear
I
the opening.
That would be great.
On my team, yeah.
Any other comments about Representative Hayden's comments? We appreciate that, and I think you will serve a good purpose on that commission.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Good. Thank you. Representative Hansen, I don't see a fiscal note yet, and some of the people that have responded or have communicated to us have been especially concerned about the costs, and this is a finance committee, and so we too are concerned about the costs. And so we're going to give Representative Hayden and Representative Carlson a little more time to work with the other stakeholder groups and work with you, see how this, the incident that you talked about early at the beginning of the meeting, lies for for a few days, and we're not going to vote today. Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, I know there is one equipment manufacturer, I think, that came and has been here since this morning. There have been some people that came that have been here since this morning. So I would ask, I know it's been a long meeting, but that they at least be given the opportunity to testify, because I think they've been sitting here for a very long time today, if that's...
Okay, I wasn't aware that there were other people.
Well, I thought there was an equipment person, so I'd like the equipment person first.
Yeah, we haven't heard from an equipment person.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Joel Anderson. I work for an equipment manufacturer that develops and has equipment that monitors air quality in buildings, primarily develop things for sick building syndrome. And my background, which part of the reason why I'm sitting here today, is because I was a hockey player. I wasn't very good, so I coached. And then from that, I ended up becoming an ice rink person. I went to school at Dunwoody Institute for Refrigeration and HVAC Design. So my background is basically building ice skating rinks, HVAC systems, exhaust systems, and those types of things. And I started doing that in about 1978. And since then, I've been involved with hundreds of ice rink installations. I'm in a rink every day. I work with managers. I do service work. I consult to ice rinks, I consult to cities that are looking at building them or modifying them. So that's my background. And about 10 years ago, a friend of mine said that they were developing a product for sick building syndrome. And I said this would be a perfect application for the ice rinks, because we're using some outdated technology and this type of thing. So they came up with this program, this equipment. It is a continuously monitoring system that monitors carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide all the time. I had a longer reading here that I was going to explain some things, but I think the short version, because I know you're in a hurry, is that what it does is we've been working with the Minnesota Department of Health. Last year I went to them with this product, and I showed it to them. We did a test, and they were happy with it, but at the time we were talking about the rulemaking. That they said, we're just coming into rulemaking, so we don't really, you know, we're not sure where all this is going to shake out. So the equipment was there; it's available. But because we were doing this rulemaking, we ceased the test. Part of the request was that we have some sort of an output that's not currently in the bill, but we have an output now that signals or turns on exhaust fans. Could tell the operator with an auto dialer to call the manager to say, "Hey, your levels are rising too high." Those types of things. So that is available, and we've installed it. And the health department wasn't notified of the installation until today. I called them just to say, okay, it's been operating for a couple of weeks in Stillwater at the ice rink. So they haven't had a chance to look at the system yet. They haven't had a chance to review it. They reviewed the original installation, which didn't have an output, but they have not seen the final version of this. So they have to have some time to do that. But the technology does exist there. It's a high quality sensing system. The sensors required have to be very high quality. They can't be, let's just put it this way. The system costs about $6,000, okay, to install. That's the software that goes onto your computer. That's the unit that sits in the rink area that draws air off the rink continuously. And then another unit that goes in the mechanical room that would either turn on exhaust fan or dehumidification system, or even call the manager to say, hey, we've got a problem. In the test case, I think what has been stated before is that some of the non-occupied times, the levels can rise because of the settling. That's exactly what we have found, is that when we monitor full time, the nitrogen dioxide actually settles, and at midnight we can have some of our highest readings. And people aren't aware of this. The other thing, we have some spikes when they do the edging, so we've kind of given the manager a program to say, okay, when you edge, maybe have the operator go and take a 15-minute break, and they can literally watch the levels come down to a safe level. We haven't exceeded any of the standards by the current code as far as exceeding the levels of too many parts where you have to evacuate or anything like this. There's some other things that the system does that's a benefit to the operator. It senses air temperature and humidity at the same time, so they're able to run their dehumidification system if they want. One of the things that I think needs to be pointed out is that the rink managers, I think, by and large, are all of them are doing what they feel is correct. And many of them are what I would consider to say over-ventilating because they don't have the tools to tell them how much ventilation do we need, where are we at in the building at any given time, because they're testing one time once a week, and sometimes they may go out there and test additionally, but they're not testing all the time. So what we're doing is we're setting a very low standard. On this one particular job, we have three fans in the rink, exhaust fans. At 5 parts per million, we turn on the first fan. If it gets up to 10 parts per million, we turn on all the fans, okay? And the managers, we set these levels very low, so we never, ever get up to where we'd be at a 25 parts per million or even 30 parts per million. So the rink never gets to an alarm state. So sometimes that means that we don't need to exhaust very much at all. One of the things that's been discussed is that in 2003, the EPA required emissions to be standards to be raised for catalytic converters, and I think that this bill addresses that we bring our standards up so we're not emitting. And that's all great. And they've also improved their fuel management system, which has really reduced the emissions quite a bit, and I think that's fantastic. The problem is, and what we've seen, is that these things wear out and they fail.
Right.
And what happens is that if you have a part-time driver out there, he may or may not notice this or may or may not understand the complexity of a catalytic converter, whether it's working properly or not. He may not notice. In the meantime, we're emitting fumes, and we're potentially in an unsafe condition for the users. And so I'm an advocate for continuous monitoring because I believe that's the only way for anyone to know exactly what's going on in your rink. When you test, we could test once a week, and we could be in compliance all the time. No question about it, and I firmly believe that every rink probably is in compliance, even if they don't test more than once a week, but we don't know that. So I know that in this test that we've done, we've seen spikes from time to time where people, they had an ice show, and they, instead of using the Zamboni, they went out there with a little garden tractor and did some of the ice maintenance, because they have a little garden tractor resurfacing thing, okay? Well, the CO went up to 17 parts per million, and I asked them, I said, "Why? What did you do?" And they couldn't even remember. And they didn't think to turn on the exhaust fan. But because the system was hooked up, the exhaust fans came on automatically.
Wow.
And the people that were working there didn't have to think. It just did it for them. The manager comes in and he reviews the logs. It provides a permanent historical data of what's going on in your facility. We are working with the health department on this because everything that we're trying to do with these tools needs to comply with everything that they're trying to do with the rulemaking, and we're working together with them, and that's why we're not pushing this ahead of what they're doing. So that's why we haven't been out there, we haven't been saying, hey, this is done, complete, we're trying to work together. I guess that's the short version.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And, Madam Chair, and I wanted
Representative Hansen.
There was another equipment manufacturer here. I want to make sure I'm not endorsing any particular product, but you had asked the question about cost, and we haven't had the opportunity to actually put on the table cost that you just heard, the cost for equipment available today. This bill, the DE4, does not say do this today for installing air monitoring equipment. It says have a pilot project with the health department working with people like this to get answers, and then in 5 years have that requirement, 5 years from now. And we've heard that the equipment is not available. You've now just had testimony that there's equipment available now.
But Representative Hansen, there's still a lot of Milky Ways to sell in the snack shop.
It is.
Between now and 2014. A lot of Milky Ways to eat, and then that poundage will go on, and then we run into another problem. All right. Any other comments? Is there anyone else that wants to testify that hasn't had an opportunity before? If not, Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the minutes of the April 19th meeting as submitted.
Representative Morgan moves adoption of the minutes as printed. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Hansen, we will talk again. This meeting is adjourned. Stupid.